Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo, where available.
This episode of the Linux Action Show brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com. Use the promo code Linux to save yourself some cash. And of course, from donations from listeners like you.
This week on the Linux Action Show, the latest release of Firefox is near, and it's rocking the broadest Linux support ever. Then, our news docket is packed with so many juicy stories. We cherry-pick the best and make a tasty pie. All this week on the Linux Action Show.
And welcome to the Linux Action Show. This is Season 15, Episode 8. My name is Brian. That guy over there in the other floating box is Chris.
Hey there, Brian. You've got to check out this awesome Runs Linux that was sent in by Jay Pierce in the chat room, and it's his birthday today. So happy birthday, dude.
Holy moly, that's epic looking.
He sent this thing in to us. Now, if you're watching the video version, I'm going to let you get a gander of it because I got to switch back over to actually read the name of it. It's called the FBCB2, and it runs Linux. And it's a military-grade computer system that goes in their various vehicles, like, vehicles like we're showing here in the video version, helicopters, trucks, things like that. And it runs Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and there's a picture of Jay Pierce. Hopefully it's okay. I show that. he told me he made sure not to send any classified information about it. But he said, no exaggeration, this system was actually used in the capture of Saddam Hussein.
And, no way.
So... there you go. Linux being used all over the world to keep the men and women in arms safe and informed, which is awesome.
Dude, that's epic. That's sort of awesome.
Yeah, you know, the hardware of this thing just looks super, super robust. Like, you can tell this thing's built for the situations that they are in. And it's Blue Force Tracking is what it stands for, is what the FBCB2 stands for, is Blue Force Tracking, I believe.
Dude, that thing is hardcore.
Yeah.
I want that on my desk. I just want, like, the main part. It looks like one of those, like, late 1980s, like, desktop PCs with, like, battle ridges all over it.
Totally does. So, you know, big shout-outs to Jay Pierce. Happy birthday. I'm glad you could join us live, too. And I want to say thanks for sending that in. And if you've got an awesome Run Linux, because I can only see so many of them, if you've got a Runs Linux that's totally cool, you want to see featured at the top of the show, email it to me, chris@jupiterbroadcasting.com.
Otherwise, we'll just keep mentioning that things like TiVo runs Linux over and over again, and that just is going to get boring.
Dude, I totally regret picking TiVo as, like, my first, like, the first time I did a Runs Linux, which was just totally, like, an arbitrary thing that I was like, you're like, hey, Chris, and I was like, hey, Brian, the TiVo runs Linux, and then it became a thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I went with TiVo out of the gate. You don't go with TiVo out of the gate. You save that one for a little while. So I always have been having to outshine TiVo since then.
I know. Plus, it makes you the guy that talks about TiVo.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's the thing.
Yeah. Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing just Jim Dandy.
Yeah, we were going to be in studio today, but you ended up having to do another Skype call because we got dumped on snow. Snow got dumped on us all weekend.
Mega dumped.
Yeah, J-Man.
Yesterday was awful.
The J-Man's been having to do Jupiter at night and Stoked over Skype, too, just because, like, where he's at, he's got, like, 3 feet of snow. And I've actually tracked it all back to Jeremy. He went on Jupiter at night like 2 weeks ago. We were doing epic snow coverage and talking about the snow on the East Coast and stuff. And Jeremy thought it'd be really cute and funny to throw up a picture behind us of his backyard, which was like, looked like spring. It was nice and sunny and very pleasant. Looks like you'd want to throw up a hammock and take a nap. And he's like,
sure, yeah.
You guys might be having snow, but here's my backyard. Well, he hasn't left his house in a week now because of that.
He jinxed us.
Yeah, he jinxed us.
Yeah, dude,
it's his fault.
It's epic sorts of bad out here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we have, like, feet upon feet of snow, but the snow that is falling down is like, they look like little styrofoam balls. They're like these little soft little roly marble pieces of ice. They're not quite hail. They're not quite snow.
It's like a sheet of powdered ice.
Bearings, like frozen ball bearings are just laying on the ground. So, like, the cars are just sliding everywhere. It's fantastic.
Hey, man, I have got probably one of the best games I've seen come to Android yet. But before we get to that, I think we should give a holler to GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy's, Brian?
The place where you can go that has a website that you can register domain names and get servers, and they're amazing, and they're awesome, and it's super great, and you can type in Linux and save 10%, and you can type in Linux 2.0 and save 20% off of server hosting. I don't want to talk about them.
You know, why would you want to, man?
I wouldn't want to.
No, 20% off server hosting, that's ridiculous.
That's horrible. I don't want to talk about it.
All right, Brian. Now, big thanks to GoDaddy, but it's time to talk about my Android pick because I'm really, really liking this game. It's called Air Attack HD Lite, which means for some reason, whenever you put Lite at the end of some sort of app, that just automatically means it's free. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So, that means it's free.
Yeah, that means it's free. Now, Air Attack Lite is, you'll hear a little bit coming through my speakers, I think. It's partly just for the music. Yeah, isn't this epic? Yeah. So it's just a really simple, you know, you drag airplanes around, you blow stuff up. I mean, we've seen these games for years.
I can't hear you. I just hear music.
All right, I'll turn it down.
That's all I hear is music.
So, we've played these games, you know, on every system that's ever had games. But the combination of all the different things, like, you destroy terrain, it gives a little bit on the sides.
It's groovy.
Yeah, so you can kind of move from side to side a little bit more than what it shows on the screen at one time.
It uses the tilt kind of control thing.
It doesn't, at least mine didn't. The Lite version, you use your finger and you drag. I prefer that.
I like that better too.
Yeah, I think that's a better form of control. But
man, when are they going to come out with an Android phone that has a D-pad on it?
Well, like, Sony's working on it.
I know theoretically that Sony one's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
I want one that's not a Sony one.
I know, me too. Me too.
I want HTC to come out with one that's like dedicated and built for with like a D-pad and like four buttons on the side and like the screen in between the buttons. So it's essentially just like an emulator. Like
you want and you don't want touchpads. You want analog sticks. Now, Air Attack HD, you know, like I said, it's not a totally unique game, but the implementation of it's done so well. Also, I've heard a lot of people saying it works good on all kinds of different Android devices, which is not always an obtainable goal.
I'm assuming that there's a non-Lite version.
Yes, they're not yet for Android, but there will be. I think the non-Lite version is already out on iOS, but it's not yet on Android.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. That's cool. But I picked it up, and you know, for a few levels, it's not bad. So check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes, and then Majo in the IRC chat room has been a diligent soldier and has been keeping all of my Android picks in there, and I have a link to that. So if you've just gotten yourself an Android phone, at this point, there's like a lot of picks that you can just load up and make a rockin' Android phone.
Indeed.
So check that out. And you know, B-Man, have you ever been to AppBrain?
I have.
Yeah, AppBrain's where it's at, man. I do all this stuff through AppBrain. And if it's not as necessary now that, Android is doing the over-the-air installation with the marketplace.
You know, that's all fine and fantastic, but I'm still using this little bad mamma jamma here.
Yeah,
and you know what I do instead of AppBrain? I drop down to my command line, and I go apt-get install what I want to install. I want scum-vm, apt-get scum-vm.
You the baller man, Brian.
Because I run Linux, and that's the Linux phone.
I like
that's
that. Although it wouldn't, I would like to see an AppBrain for the Nokia systems too. That would be kind of cool. I mean, I'd take it. I'm just saying. If they had it, I might take a look at it.
I'm making shrugging motions for of you listening to the audio version.
Yeah,
lots of shrugging going on.
Yeah,
right now.
Remote Skype shrugging. It was very effective, though, with your limited screen real estate you had. You still managed to shrug.
Right? Yeah, it actually kind of worked.
All right, Brian, let's do the news.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian. Boy, do we have a news docket lined up today. I mean, we've got so much news that honestly, we're just going to go with it. And if we go too long, we might just make a separate
show. A lot of news.
There's a
lot of news, and this stuff has to get covered. So
it's important.
We
were looking at the lineup. We're like, we should cut some of this stuff. No, we need to cover all of it.
We did. I cut like five or six kind of interesting stories out before you took a look this morning, and then we cut another couple now.
We're gonna jump into it, and we don't know how long it's gonna be. And if it goes long, you can probably expect to look for a part two episode of it. But we'll just see. Our top story on the news docket for this week: Canonical's new plan for Banshee has been announced. Now this was the main topic of last week's episode for sure, was that Canonical and Banshee were kind of going back and forth, and some of the details were new at the time. We'll kind of get into that later, but this is sort of the final deal that's sort of been struck between these two groups. Banshee's Amazon store is going to remain enabled in Ubuntu, with Canonical taking 75% of all the affiliate revenue generated from purchases in the music store, and then 25% on Ubuntu of what Ubuntu 25% of which will go to the GNOME Foundation. It's kind of complicated there. But so they're still giving GNOME a cut. They're just giving GNOME a 25% cut instead of a 100% cut.
Right. Though it gets even better than that, though. So then what Canonical then turned around and did and said they're also going to be giving a cut from their Ubuntu One sales.
Right.
From the Ubuntu One music store over to the GNOME Foundation as well.
And the same is going to happen in Rhythmbox, which is right. also, that's, you know, you combine those two different things. I mean, that could be significant. You know what I mean?
Very significant, considering Banshee is, it's
because you're now giving a 50%. You're giving a 50% cut when you combine those two things together.
That's not exactly how the math works, but, no. How's but that it's not still really good.
Because well, the thing
what
is,
we're
though,
talking about is it's now more revenue sources, less total amount per revenue source. But
right.
honestly, most
that's
people
true.
That install, Ubuntu, my inclination would be they're probably going to be going for the Ubuntu One Music Store over probably, say, the Amazon plugin through Banshee. I think so. Ubuntu, Canonical's been really pushing it. They've been pushing the Ubuntu One Music Store. They've been pushing the Software Center. They've been making some good progress there. So honestly, my guess is this will mean overall more money donated to GNOME than was previously. So I really like it. I think it's great.
What's your thoughts, though? I mean, you gotta acknowledge the fact that there is still a lot of angry people over this. In fact, did you see Miguel Irikaza, who,
yes.
you know, I mean, famous for Mono these days, but also famous for founding the GNOME Project. So we're talking about...
Do you have that his little tweet up?
I'll dig Jeff? For it. Yeah, I favorited
yeah, go,
it.
Go,
so
go pull that up. Yeah, because Miguel Diacaza, you know, of the Mono Project, he made this little tweet on the Twitter.
Yeah.
Over to John O'Bacon, you know, the community guy over at Canonical. If Chris can find it, it was.
How do
one
you
of
find
most...
your favorite tweets? Oh, there we go. I got it right here.
It was ridiculous.
Here it is. So Miguel Irikaza, responding to John O'Bacon, the community manager for Ubuntu. Said at John O'Bacon, "Oh, you're entirely within your rights. Douchebags, assholes, and dicks almost never violate any laws. A dick move is a dick move."
Yeah, of course, referring to all of this stuff. Referring to the theoretically Canonical right. would not be shipping the Banshee specific Amazon store plugin in Banshee for Ubuntu.
And he's got a close association with GNOME, and so anything that takes more money away from GNOME is obviously going to be
right.
He's not
right.
going to be
now,
a big fan of.
Now, come on. So we were a little harsh on Ubuntu last week, but our harsh stance simply stemmed from the fact that we felt that there was two issues. One, this was either just kind of a mistake or wasn't totally
right.
thought through.
Right.
Or two, really, this was just kind of a PR issue. You know, someone talked about things a little bit before they probably should have.
Somebody blogged
They didn't really get out in front of the potential firestorm that may happen on the Bloggo and Twitto spheres about
which
all the
is
activity.
And my complaint was that's a typical Canonical mistake to
And it is. It is a typical Canonical mistake, but it's obvious that Canonical is not trying to hurt anybody here. Mm. They're just kind of working through the issues. Obviously, within a few days of talking about this publicly, they're like, oh, you know what? We need to modify this a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, here's a new deal where this will probably mean more total money for the GNOME Foundation.
Right.
This is Canonical doing right, doing the good thing, helping out the community, donating more money that they did not have to donate before. This is money that they're making from sales of Ubuntu One now are actually being donated to GNOME. That was not happening before. So this is a big deal. This is very, very good. And for Miguel to come out and start spouting that sort of stuff, that's ridiculous.
It's one-sided. You know, there's a really good conversation and a really good discussion in our Jupiter Colony thread for the Ubuntu versus Banshee episode that we did. I mean, it's 4 pages long now, but we have the greatest conversations in there. And some of the points that were brought up was that it still feels like it's a little Apple-esque. You know, in fact, they're taking a larger revenue cut than Apple does in the iOS store with all of their latest publicized stuff. And so people are in that camp are upset. And there's other people in another camp that says, well, a couple of factors. And I can start to kind of see some of this. First factor is if you take money and if Canonical earns revenue through these things, what does Canonical spend their money on? Well, mostly Ubuntu. I mean, unless they're setting up other things, but, you know, mostly Ubuntu. And what happens when you develop for Ubuntu? That goes to further Linux. A lot of that code makes it back. I mean, we've got stories about that coming up, about Ubuntu-specific code making it into other open-source projects, because people get on Canonical and Ubuntu a lot for not contributing back to open-source. But then when, you know, you look at some of these big changes that have happened on the Linux desktop, you know, are directly inspired from Canonical and Ubuntu or taken from their code. So when you invest in Ubuntu, you invest essentially in Linux. And yeah, there's a percentage that has to go to the operational organization that has to make those investments themselves. But come on, that's fair. And they're building a desktop platform for applications to run on here. You know, it's like, I don't know. I know it's a tough call, and I'm not. You can tell I wishwash either way. I don't know which way is the right way, but I think the deal we have now is
good,
reasonable.
It's good. I mean, it makes sense. It's good for everybody. It's reasonable, and it shows a willingness on Canonical's part to talk with the people in the community, to work with the other projects, to find solutions that work for everybody. It's not just them coming down and laying down the iron hammer of Thor and saying, this way it shall be, and going forward. They're working with everybody.
And
comparing them to how Apple does business is...
It's not fair.
It's not cool. And to be honest, it's not accurate either. Apple does not allow anyone to distribute their software with a new Mac and earn a bunch of royalties off of the sales through someone else's competing store.
Right.
In fact, if you try and make applications that make money through competing stores and sell it through the Mac App Store or the iPhone App Store, Apple shuts you down.
Yeah, yeah.
As is in the news constantly.
Right.
Canonical's not even talking about not shutting them down. Canonical's saying, you know what, let's go ahead and even take it a step further. Let's ship you by default with this stuff involved, and we just want to have a cut for being part of our platform, for using our distribution services. And to top it off, we think you're doing a great thing, so we're going to go ahead and give a cut of our proceeds from other sources to the same causes you were giving to in the first place. That's really cool.
It happens at a time. I mean, you make a great point. I mean, anybody could go out and go get the Banshee package without the Amazon affiliate tweaks, and they'd be fine. And that's that. The other thing, though, is that really it's... I guess it's just people are jumping down Canonical's throat, and it might be a larger indication of maybe some of their internet shine is wearing off. You know, I worry that as geeks that are the type of geeks that are into open source and Linux, there's often a bias that when something starts to become popular and mainstream, even just, you know, starts to smell that it's going that direction, we start to pull back and we start to change the filter in which we view the actions of that company.
Yeah.
And we start to consider ulterior motives as they sort of increase their reach. And it feels like that's happening with Ubuntu. And
it does.
There's always going to be distributions out there like Arch and Fedora that, or who knows what Fedora will do, but there's always distributions out there that are probably going to have, that aren't going to have these secondary interests to impact this. But I think what's important to keep in mind here is the other way this would have been, if this would have been an Apple move, Apple would have shipped the product with it the way they wanted it and not said anything, and then they just would have dropped the bomb, and then they just would have said, go F yourself. Canonical, yes. We're talking about something that's going to be included in a version of the desktop that's not even shipping yet. So it actually isn't even a real problem yet, and it's already moving towards a resolution that sounds like it's a pretty equitable one.
Exactly, which is fantastic. So I think it says a lot of good stuff about Canonical. It says good stuff about the community. Because honestly, even though, you know, we kind of jumped at Canonical and said, hey, you guys got to fix this. A lot of people in the blogosphere, they got even extra pissed off and got a little bit just crazy frothy in the mouth. And honestly, while it comes across as a little bit kind of anti-Canonical, I think it's good in the end because it keeps everyone in check.
Yeah.
And honestly, both sides keep talking. What
it,
I'm
it does.
Not really yeah. overly cool with is when a resolution are reached and people are obviously, including Canonical, trying to do the best for everyone, when other people are still jumping down each other's throats and still just attacking like what Miguel did. Honestly, that's not cool. Needs to end. That's no good.
Yeah.
The other point you made about, you know, the shine of Ubuntu kind of wearing off a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome because, I mean, Canonical makes a great project. The work they do on Ubuntu is awesome. It benefits the whole ecosystem. Ubuntu itself is great. But what's great about that shine wearing off, even if it's just temporary, is it gets people to look at the other distributions more.
Mm.
And Canonical with Ubuntu has so much of the market share right now. It's great to see people taking a look around at Arch, at OpenSUSE, at Saboyan, at all these different distributions that are really, really
cool. Interesting. So you're saying...
Even if they don't stay there, even if people go over to OpenSUSE and are like, oh, I prefer the Ubuntu way, and they hop on back. I think it's awesome because it exposes more people to the really cool stuff that's happening out there that a lot of times people don't get the chance to do.
That's
so
a good point.
I think it's great. I love these little things that pop up like this because they polarize everybody for just, even if it's just for a week. It's, if everyone's like, I love Banshee, so therefore, Banshee's kind of Novell related, you know what I mean? So maybe everyone's like, I love Banshee, but Ubuntu's pissing me off. I'm going to go to OpenSUSE because that's Novell related.
Right.
And that gives OpenSUSE a little bit more exposure. Therefore, it's a good thing.
That's a good point. It's sort of like a built-in self-monopoly checking system I like that. Okay. Well, that's
fantastic.
That's a good point.
No one's really going to hurt in the end, I don't think.
Yeah, and you're totally right about that. And they have momentum. It's not like they're going to fade away or something like that.
Canonical Mark's going to come out this September, and he's going to be like, guys,
we give up.
Nobody uses Ubuntu anymore.
Everybody switched.
45% market share to nothing overnight. So.
Did you guys notice how like everybody seemed busy last weekend? Yeah, they were totally reloading all their machines. We are screwed. something that I would like to see gain momentum is our next story on the news docket, so why don't we talk about that
later.
Now you might be familiar with those little like embedded Linux fast boot systems that will come on laptops. One of them is called Splashtop OS, and there's one that HP featured a lot, and it's like this super fast, low power on Linux. And
it's cool.
It is cool, and it was limited to certain kind of hardware, and they've announced that they're extending it now to all hardware that, you know, is compatible. And their claim to fame, and I was just playing a video, but I actually didn't do it fast enough. Their claim to fame is a 5-second boot process. So I'm going to play it right now on the show.
Here we go.
Set, go. And it's booting, and it's booted. How about that? Of course, it ships with a huge Bing bar, and that's kind of obnoxious, but it comes with Chrome and a bunch of Chrome apps. And the whole idea is you load it on a netbook or something like that, and it works. Now, if your netbook is kind of along the lines of an HP Mini, or an HP Pavilion DM3 or 4, or a DV3 or 4, you're probably going to be able to load this. And you can actually install it from within Windows, too, which is really something.
That's groovy.
It'll set up a little tiny pre-boot partition, and I think this is the neatest thing. And it will install itself there, and then I haven't tried it yet on my machine, you get a bootloader option, and then you just, I just need to check my email. I can boot up in 5 seconds and do that.
Yep.
So that's pretty neat. So that's the new Splashtop OS, and it's definitely one to look at. And hey, you know, it's Linux-based, so.
I mean, I have very little say about it because, honestly, I'm not going to run Splashtop OS on any of my machines, but I think it's way cool.
You know, I could see it like if I had guests over a lot, and I wanted to give them like a little netbook while they were here or something.
You didn't want to like blow away your netbook, but you want to have like a secondary boot thing for just them to use,
especially in the EEE netbooks where you can install an OS to the SD card or to the internal SD, so you can kind of just like, you could pop that SD, an SD card with Splashtop on it that you just popped in and rolled when you needed it.
I do have an Arch SD card for my EEE.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm not using any of that anymore because, of course, my EEEs are dedicated to running my BBS now.
Right.
But, you know, if my EEEs were not repurposed as a massive server, I would totally think about that.
I guess the other thing that we should mention before we jump into a couple more stories is we haven't talked a lot about LibreOffice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just because I'm kind of waiting for some things to materialize, really. It's awesome.
I've been running LibreOffice since it hit, and LibreOffice is great. Honestly, they've done a little bit of design work that looks better and better all the time. I like the look and feel of it. I even dig their new icons. They're doing really good work now, and what's really cool is they're trying to basically form an official foundation over there, and I believe it's Germany. Start an official the document foundation.
Official legal entity.
In order to build that foundation, in order to legally establish it, they had to raise a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
And basically, they need to raise 50,000 in funny money, or in euros.
Euros, 50,000 euros, yeah.
I have no idea. What that equates to? It's probably like $7.50 in U.S. dollars.
I was going to see if I could do it in, doesn't Google do a conversion
like
for
that.
You? Look at that. It does. It's
what is that?
68,000 U.S. dollars.
68,000 U.S. bucks. Look at that. That's no chump change.
No.
They needed to raise that cash. And so they just kind of put out the call. They're like, hey, you know what? We need some donations. They did it in 8 days with 2,000 people
folks
donating. It took 8 days.
That's awesome.
Nothing.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
68 grand in 8 days.
Great job on multiple fronts. Great job to the guys behind LibreOffice for getting the word out and making that happen, and having a product that's cool enough and valuable enough to make that happen. And really great job to the community for actually jumping in and pitching in. That's very, very cool. I would love to see more success stories like that happen.
Yeah,
but
dude.
That's awesome.
And now they're a legal entity, which makes them kind of like an official real thing that they can get protections that includes. And, I mean, that's a huge step for them.
They are a force to be reckoned with.
They are. Another force to be reckoned with is going to be GNOME 3.0. And we've got a link in the show notes. We talked about it just briefly, the new GNOME shell last week and stuff like that, and how the alpha was out. Well, guess what? It's still under active development, but you can go get the live CD for 64-bit or 32-bit.
The official live CD, yeah.
The official, and I tried it on two different boxes. I tried it on VMware just because I didn't want to nuke a whole system just to try out alpha software. You know what I mean? So I thought, all right, I'll throw it in VMware. Well, that it booted, but it did like some sort of fallback to some super ugly GNOME. I assume it was some sort of 3D issue. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not like I was going to install VMware tools on a live CD. And then I tried it native hardware and with an ATI card, and that wouldn't even load up. So I didn't get a chance to play with it. But
yeah, it worked okay on my machine here that has an Intel graphics chip.
That's what I need to try it on.
Quite well, but that's the only machine I really tried it on, and it worked well. It had some issues, obviously.
I guess it is, huh? It must be. That must be what it was. That must have been why it was failing in my VMware. I would assume.
Could be. Yeah. Could be. But it's worth taking a look at. There are other distributions that you can grab right now. There's an OpenSUSE version. There's an Ubuntu distro out there. And of course, you can just install the packages. If you're on Arch, you're good to go.
Yeah.
But this is just kind of a nice way to give it a spin. I think they're at like version 2.9 point something right now.
It's getting
on
close.
On the road to the official 3. We're looking at an April launch, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's April. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
April's going to be a very, very big month.
Yeah, it is.
In the Linux world.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with all the distros releasing around that time, too.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Considering both GNOME 3 and Ubuntu's Unity are theoretically going to be hitting the ground within just weeks of each other.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be interesting because you know we're going to talk about that on the show. Something else is kind of interesting. We teased it just for a sec there. Like we said, a lot of people give Canonical a hard time about their code not making it back to other open source projects. But we've got an example here I've got a couple of examples here, but the first one up is the, you know, those window menu indicator things like for Rhythmbox and stuff like that, where you can click like the volume menu and get your play and pause controls right there in the volume control.
Yeah. The indicator applets.
Yep. That's been ported over to OpenSUSE. And it's funny that you found this story, dude, because I found a story from about the same developer who did this port, also porting Unity, Nelson Marquez, I believe his name is.
Yes.
So he's an OpenSUSE contributor, but he's working on porting some of the more well-known Ubuntu projects over to OpenSUSE, which is pretty interesting.
The great thing, I love OpenSUSE and I love Ubuntu. I mean, they're my two primary distros. I mean, they always vie for my affections. I sit at home and I stare at both of them and I want to kiss on both and I want to hug both of them, but you can't at the same time. It's very difficult for me. So what I love is, you know, I love being able to take all the really cool stuff from Ubuntu, stick it on top of OpenSUSE and kind of get the best of both worlds.
It's
fantastic.
This the same guy, Nelson Marquez, or I'm sorry if I'm butchering that name.
I
think he's gotten Unity already, well, the current working version of Unity already ported, and now he's working on the program Synapse, which is kind of like GNOME do, with some more features, and he's getting that going on OpenSUSE as well. So that's some good stuff coming to the OpenSUSE folks.
Awesome.
Now this next story is, I think, probably might be one of the biggest stories of 2011, depending on how Firefox pulls this off. Mozilla Firefox 4 Beta 5 is out, and Brian, you summed this up in probably the most important way to our audience. Is it's shipping on more Linux platforms than it's ever shipped on before. Like, they're doubling down on their Linux support here.
Yeah, check this out, guys. So, so of course, Firefox is coming out. The next version, Firefox 4, is coming out for Windows, and it's coming out for Mac. That's great and all. And, of course, it's coming out for Linux desktops. We like that, but we assume it's going to happen.
Yeah.
The Firefox 4 mobile edition, shipping at the same time, in theory. A new beta just came out, is shipping for both Android and, get this, MAMO.
Yeah.
The dead platform. The twice dead platform.
I know.
Hell, the thrice dead platform, depending on how you count the number of murders that have been committed against MAMO.
Dude,
is getting a version of mobile, of Firefox Mobile 4. The crazy thing is, the very first version of Firefox Mobile, or what used to be called Fennec, the first place it ever came out was MAMO. And they're still supporting MAMO, and I've got it running here. It runs great.
Yeah?
It runs great.
Well, that's cool.
Its speed is decent, not great, but the quality is great. The look and feel is good. The rendering is fantastic. And the great thing here is, think about this. MAMO tablets, Ubuntu tablets, you know, phones and tablets,
right,
and Linux desktops. That's three. That's three distinct platforms.
Yeah. And you know,
that's one more platform than all the other platforms Firefox is shipping on by default combined.
I know.
Linux wins in terms of Firefox, which is pretty awesome right now.
I've been using Firefox 4, the beta, on my Android phone, which isn't in the marketplace, I don't think, yet. You have to go over to Mozilla.com and download it, the APK, if you want to get on Android. But you know, it, like regular Firefox, and this might be a bias on my part, but it seems to start slower. But you know, on Android, once stuff's running and you go out of it, it just pauses. So it's you don't really have to do that again. And it definitely has some of the best page rendering. The other thing that is really, really, I mean, kind of almost making me switch from Chrome to Firefox is the sync feature that is now, you know, not only does Firefox 4 stay in sync across all the Firefox 4 machines, all your bookmarks, your passwords, and your open tabs, but all of that S now syncs to your mobile phone, too.
Yep.
And you know how many times I'm out on the road and I've needed a bookmark that's on my desktop but is not on my phone? It actually happens more than it should. I don't know what my problem is. And then you have passwords. That's a whole other separate issue. And then, you know, the whole nice thing about syncing your tabs means, oh, I'm sitting here browsing the web. That's neat. You know what? I feel like getting some blood in my legs. I'm going to stand up and walk around, but I want to keep reading this. You just open up Firefox 4 on your Android or your MAMO device, and it's the tabs are just synced up right there. You just resume where you're at. That is so slick.
It's really, really cool, and I love it. Like I've been using mostly on my desktop. I've been using Chrome on my handhelds. I've been using kind of the built-in browser, and sometimes some of the WebKit little smaller browsers. But honestly, I think after been playing around with the Firefox 4 beta, despite the let's just call it crap. Despite the crap I've given to the Firefox team over the last few years about how slow and bloated Firefox has gotten, they've done so much good work here where they've kind of really turned it around. And now with having the ability to run the same browser or similar browsers with the sync feature across my N900, my Linux desktops, and the few occasions I have to boot up Windows or OS 10.
It's nice.
I love it. This is great. I just wanted to call a shout out here because if anyone wants to give us crap for you know, Linux or Linux not having enough market share to get major apps, we can always point out that the Mozilla team and Firefox is on more Linux based platforms than Windows or Mac or anything like that. So it's worth poking people with
the Firefox PBA for Bluetooth works just great on Mint. That's what I've been using here.
It's minefield.
And you know what? I've been using it for 2 months now. And I'm not totally made up my mind on which is a more competitive browser, but I do feel like the stuff renders faster than Chrome under Linux. So under Linux, using Chrome and Firefox 4, I feel like Firefox 4 is actually a better performer. And I don't know why that is, because I'm a big Chrome fan, but I've honestly started, because of that and also the sync features, I've just started using Firefox more, faster. It's faster, and I don't know. Cool. It feels like it puts less of a drag on the overall system. Like sometimes I feel like when Chrome's rendering an entire page under Linux, the whole Linux desktop can get a little laggy. And I don't, that doesn't seem to happen with Firefox. It just seems to be isolated to the Firefox browser.
Yeah.
You know, that's really nice.
It's nice to see Firefox getting fast, and it's funny to see Chrome slowing down.
Exactly. Yeah.
They've kind of switched positions in the last just couple of months.
Yeah.
It's nice. Hopefully this puts a lot of pressure back onto Google to make Chrome a little bit
a little leaner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a quick shout out too, while we were talking about OpenSUSE, the OpenSUSE 11.4 RC2 released.
And which I believe we've only got 12 days until the final 11.4 OpenSUSE release. So not this next episode, but the episode after that, we'll be doing our OpenSUSE 11.4 review here on the Linux Action Show, which looks like a great release. We won't dive into it too much just yet, but it looks like a solid release right now. So and if you're switching, not see jump in right now. It looks pretty good.
They're going to be rocking. They're rocking KDE 4.6, and they're going to be switching to LibreOffice from OpenOffice. So
nice.
That'll be interesting.
Nice. Two moves I approve of.
Now, I actually completely, you were Johnny on the spot with the news this week, because I completely forgot about this, that this was even a story. Amazon Prime Video Streaming was announced the last week, and I noticed Amazon does all of their stuff, at least on the desktop, through Flash. And I thought, well, 99.9% of the time, that would drive me nuts. Except for we have Flash for Linux.
Yeah, and I mean, if the Amazon's new video streaming service doesn't have quite the number of movies that
Chatroom says I was sending them an Echo feed of something.
I think you got an Echo whenever you're on the product shot, whenever you're on the desktop shot.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that, folks.
That's okay. So, I mean, it's cool to see it working on Linux anyway.
Very cool.
And hopefully Amazon just gets more movies and TV shows loaded up in that, because if that's the case, that's a good deal, just signing up for Amazon.
Dude, it's a way good deal. I mean, Linux users, it's still got, still got DRM. It's still copy protected and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but come on, so are DVDs. And we as, Linux users still buy DVDs or Blu-rays or something, or video games. We don't not buy anything ever.
That's
DRM is fine. Yeah. We just don't want our systems bogged down with it.
That's how I look at it.
In this case, a little video streaming with some DRM, it's totally fine for cheap, decently high quality video streaming. Done. Love it.
Yep. One nice Fedora love story on the news docket. We've got two love stories before we wrap up the news this week. And, B-Man, we don't often have a lot of love to share for the Fedora folks.
No.
No. Why not do this?
In fact, quite the opposite normally. Normally, we have lots and lots of hate for the Fedora folks. But honestly, I want to talk about this for a little bit, because I think what they're doing here is, quite honestly, super awesome.
Yeah.
Fedora, the Fedora project, is going to South by Southwest, which, if you're not familiar with South by Southwest, it's down in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty basically popular. Down in Austin, they have this big music and movies and art and technology. They have this huge conference there.
People
that's
screw
like
up.
It's like a crazy, crazy festival. And it's just this huge thing that spawns a whole mess of days, and it's just great.
Yeah.
Well, down there, the Fedora project has got a booth.
Yeah.
They've got their first booth at this massive festival, and their whole thing behind the booth is designers. Is they are putting together, posters and demo stations to woo graphic designers and artists and the like over to Fedora and to Linux in general.
Mm-hmm.
They've created check out the link in the show notes. They've created some absolutely fantastic little
flyers and stuff.
Little flyers. They've got like little contests going on, it's fantastic.
Good for them.
So they're going to be teaching people how to use, GIMP and Inkscape and
Scribus
and everything and else to create, basically really great artwork and really great design work. And this is awesome. This is exactly the kind of stuff that we need. And it's really nice to see, anyone doing it. And the fact that Fedora's doing it, well, that gives Fedora at least 4 brownie points, which they direly needed, because they're in negative brownie point deficit with Fedora.
They have a brownie point deficit.
This is more brownie points than any distro has earned from me in like 6 months or so.
Well,
so this,
you know,
it's good stuff.
Well, you know what I like about it too is they're not. I mean, it is to benefit Fedora too, but they say this is Duffy, who's the lead art designer for Fedora. She's been on the show, I think, like 2 years ago or something like that.
3 or 4 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
She says
we made fun of the art direction for Fedora 7. I believe it was Fedora 7, and she came on to defend it, and I felt a little bad about that. I think we bruised her pride just a little bit, but I gotta say, it showed guts to come on the show and talk to us about it. So you got to give her a little bit of props.
Oh, absolutely. And she says here in her blog post about this that the main goal is here is there's just simply not enough designers in the free software community, and she desperately wants to help to attract them. I think this is a really good idea to go to South by Southwest, because too often, not that, you know, Scale's going on, I think, this weekend.
Scale's going on right now down in Southern California.
And those are absolutely awesome. And, you know, as Linux community and open source community and a bunch of innovators, it's good to all get together. But it's also good to reach outside our social circle and go a little more mainstream from time to time, which is, I think, totally what South by Southwest is, at least mainstream for the tech circle.
Hugely mainstream.
So, you know, this is a great way to go and show them what we're doing. Show them that Linux can be hip and can be there and can be at an event like that.
Totally. Plus, I mean, really, every time anyone and us specifically talk about Fedora, one of the things we always dog on is the look and feel. You know, there's not enough polish to the look and feel. Some of the artwork needs help.
Right.
This is the best way possible, in my mind, to get people on board, to get more help with it. Mm-hmm. Just look at Linux Mint. Linux Mint's a great example. We talked about Linux Mint 4+ years ago, whatever it was now, and we managed to attract one great artist who was listening to our show at the time over to Linux Mint. Not really heavy Linux user guy, went over to Linux Mint, threw a bunch of his massive art skills into the project, and then Linux Mint, not even 6 months later, was known and renowned for having an amazing look and feel and polish. Mm-hmm. So it just takes winning over a couple of great artists to your project to do some amazing things. So this is a great move on Fedora's part.
You know who else has a good look and feel to it is, and this is just a quick mention, the PCBSD folks. PCBSD's got a new release, 8.2, and they actually implemented a new theme as well. And at least I think they did, like kind of a darker theme for KDE 4.
I got to be honest, I'm not really sure if they did or not.
I seem to recall seeing screenshots of it the other day. But
I don't really run PCBSD, but I've always liked PCBSD, but I haven't really run it since version 8 came out, and I didn't even run it that much then. But they're rocking the KDE 5.5, which, you know, KDE 6, come on.
4.6 is out, yeah. But, you know,
jump up to the 4.6, but that's okay. That's okay. 4.5.5 is still a good release of KDE, and honestly, PCBSD is cool. So that's just a quick shout out to our FreeBSD and PCBSD loving brethren. We know you're out there. Go enjoy that. Feel free to chat about it in the Linux Action Show forum, in our forum.
We're not going to kick you out.
No. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. It's totally allowed.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
All right, Brian. Well, that's all the news for this week.
Hey everybody, Jeremy here to tell you a little bit about another show here on our network, Jupiter at Night. Airing live every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 8 p.m. Pacific, this show is a great way to get info and entertainment on the topics that matter to our audience.
We cover tech news, movies, space, science, world events, gaming, and all sorts of crazy junk.
So join us live for Jupiter at Night and hang out in our active chat room every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday over at jupiterbroadcasting.com/live.
Or grab the downloaded version on demand.
So we don't have a whole lot of time left in the show, but we have gotten a fair bit of feedback over the last week or two, and I figure we'll take a little bit of time, go through some of the top ones, or at least some of the ones we feel like we can answer or want to answer in some way, and then what we're going to do is we're going to ignore all the rest of you guys.
No, yes.
Yes, that's totally what we're going to do. We're going to be like, oh, guys, we just didn't have the time, but we really
I've been replying to some of them, but yeah. The first one I wanted to do...
Wait, you reply to them?
I did a couple, yeah.
Dude, I don't reply to anybody. People send me emails. They're like, Brian, house is on fire. I'm like,
You know, I get like on a roll in my inbox, and I'm like, I start seeing that unread message count go down. I'm like, I got to keep doing this. I'm on a roll.
I have over 1,200 unread messages in my inbox.
I have 670 right now, yeah. And that's after going through some of them, yeah. One I want to talk about is, it's one part a follow-up and one part there's a problem. I've gotten a lot of people asking, hey, what are your thoughts on the Galaxy Tab for one? But I'll save that because I'm trying to hack it right now to run Honeycomb, so I'm going to try to save that for that.
Nice.
The other thing is, what are your thoughts on the Boxy Box? Because a lot of people, I think, are looking at now that Boxy just got Netflix on there.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, I bought it at right when it hit. So whatever day, I think, what was that, December 17th or 13th, whatever day you could get your hands on it, I got it. And, it's good. I bought another one after that, and I think I mentioned that in my review that we did on the Linux Action Show. It's still quirky. It's pretty good. But here's an example of what I mean quirky, and there's actually a bug that's been filed over on Boxy's website. So if you're having this problem, I'll put a link in the show notes. Maybe you can go over there and throw your thoughts in there to help us track it down. Video feeds from JupiterBroadcasting.com run 5 times slower than normal speeds. So like the video itself is slow, but the audio is fine. And I don't know if that's a frame rate issue or what. And if people have been experiencing that, I'd love for you to get in contact with me. Maybe we could, I could send you some re-encoded videos. We could try that out. Or if you, and also if you're just experiencing this problem, I really want to try to get us rocking on the Boxy Box. I mean, it's a Linux-based home entertainment system. I'd love to have the Linux Action Show videos play well on that, you know? So maybe if you're out there, you could help us work through this bug and you could give some comments on it. But that's one thing that I've been hearing from people about is our videos aren't playing on the Boxy Box. So I wanted to give a quick mention of that. Now, dude, people also, I tweeted out Friday night, hey, you know, Tweeps, we're going to be doing Linux Action Show. We want to feature some of your feedback. A few people asked us about our thoughts on the Motorola Zoom, even though we kind of talked about it last episode. Do you, anything to follow up on the Zoom?
It's kind of expensive.
It is kind of expensive.
I don't know why. I look at it and I know there's some fancy hardware in that Zoom. And I know
the iFixit guys tore it down and it looks like it's really good hardware.
And it's rocking the latest and greatest of the Android 7.6.5 or whatever the hell they're at right now. But honestly, I don't know why. Like I look at it and I just don't know why. Like yeah. I have a hard time figuring out why.
Yeah,
you know, there's some really cool tablets out there right now that you can install, you know, OpenSUSE or Ubuntu on and get a full-on Linux experience. I know that it's not really a tablet OS, and I know that. But if you look at it from this point of view, GNOME 3 hidden pretty soon, and Ubuntu's Unity are very tablet-y friendly-ish systems, and especially, you know, with Canonical doing a lot of multi-touch work right now. Hell, you get like my Lenovo S10 3T. It's not exactly the tiny, super solid form factor that you expect out of a tablet, but it's got a full multi-touch screen. It's got, you know, 8+ hours of battery life rocking Ubuntu. So I look at things, and that thing you can get for like $500. Then I look at the Zoom, which
is $7,000.
I think it's $1 million now.
Oh.
It goes up every time I check stupid news sites. And I don't know what you get out of that. You run less software on it. Technically,
so far,
it's running Android.
Yeah.
But, well, are you ever going to catch up with everything that it's in your repositories? Piece of Linux software in your repository.
No, and you would think that by the time there's more honeycomb apps, you know, that are written to take advantage of the resolution and the new features of the OS, you would think that by then there's going to be a whole new rev of the hardware out.
Exactly. By that point, you're going to want to jump to something new. My problem with Android is it's totally fine for phones, but for something like a tablet, Android changes like every 3 days. Every 3 days, Google's like, okay, everybody, we just released version 3. Don't use it. It totally sucks. Look at 3.1. 3.1's the prettiness. 3.1's super, super pretty and hot, and we made it actually work this time. All right. They basically say that every 2 months,
yeah.
And then all the manufacturers come out and say, okay, brand new hardware is hidden. And while the hardware is cool, that means you're not guaranteed that the games that come out for the store are going to be working great on your tablet. You're not guaranteed any of that. So I'm looking at that thinking, why? Why not just get one of the cool tablet netbook combos? Sure, it weighs a pound extra, but honestly, you're not going to fit the Zoom in your pants pocket anyway. You're still going to have to carry it around. You're still going to want to shove it into a big sleeve case. Why not?
Yeah, once you add case too. Now that maybe we're missing something, and it's totally possible. And at Tech Harvest on Twitter, when I asked the question, sent out a video he shot, and I'll link to that in the show notes. He picked himself up not only the Zoom, but he also picked up an Atrix, the new dual core smartphone, and he paired the Zoom and the Atrix head to head.
Yeah,
he did a little comparison battle. So I'll link to that his YouTube channel.
Link to that sucker. I mean, it does look like a cool piece of hardware. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I'm totally
with you. Then again, though, I'm also the N900 rocking guy that kind of wishes he could still rock his N810 as a phone somehow. Because
you're so old school? Yeah.
I'm old school that way, man.
Yeah.
I like to drop down to my shell. I like to get a little apt get power going on, and I know I can get some of that kind of stuff going on the Android, but it's just not the same. I don't get that at all.
I hope there's not echo in there. The chat room says we have echo again, but you know what I think I had is a flash crashed on my Mint box here, and I think it was just streaming audio in the background, so I apologize if that worked its way into the recording, everyone. One last thing to touch on is there's probably about 5 to 6 times the amount of conversations and topics and broad range of topics that get covered in the Jupiter Colony that would actually make it into the show. So if you go over to jupitercolony.com, the list of active Linux-related conversations, everything from Debian 6 to the Nokia situation still, and everything. Transcoding video under Linux, all kinds of stuff is over in JupiterColony.com.
Yeah, hey,
you know
Chris.
What?
Hey, Chris.
What? Yeah.
Stop
yeah.
switching to the desktop view. Makes sense.
I guess. Huh? I wanted to show the always innovating
textbook. No more
showing. I guess.
No more showing.
Yeah.
People are going to have to use their imaginations, use their imaginatoriums when we're talking about stuff.
Who would have thought problems with Flash, Brian? Never would have.
That's just crazy talk.
I mean, Flash, Brian. I mean, it's right. rock solid. How could it ever have a problem?
Right?
Hey, you know, did you ever get a chance? Because we have not talked much about Minecraft on this show, and it is an awesome game that runs under Linux. Now, I know you don't like the story mode Minecraft, and I'm totally there with you as well. I find it incredibly boring. I know a lot of people like it. It's just not my thing.
Yeah, it's not my deal.
The Minecraft multiplayer, though, is the hotness. And I know there's a lot of folks out there that already know about our public Minecraft. It's mc.jupitercolony.com. You can just plug that right into Minecraft, and it'll go into our little world. It's pretty cool. And also, if you are a Linux user rocking Minecraft, and you should be because it's a good game that's out on Linux, I think the Linux Outlaw guys also have a Minecraft server. I don't know the details on that, but I'm sure they have somewhere you can find that if... you want to play over at Jupiter Colony, and with the Linux Outlaws folks, you can hang out and do all that stuff. Because it's a pretty good game, and there's a little bit of a community building around it. It's fun to see, and because of it, we've set up a Minecraft-specific thread in our Jupiter Colony, and it's fun to see Linux users kind of get to talk about Linux, but in a gaming aspect more, and that's happening over there, too. So
you know what that is. It's groovy.
Yeah, I agree. I'm all kinds of grooved out. I feel bummed that we had echo in the shot. I'm sorry about
hey,
that.
Hey, Chris.
Folks. Yeah?
If I were there right now, yeah. I'd hug you.
Thanks, B. Maybe
yeah,
just a
you
high
know,
five.
You know
here,
what I bet?
Here, let's see if we can pull off an internet high five. You ready? Here, give me a high
ready.
Five. Put your, okay,
right.
and
hold on.
Go. Wait, okay, right go, go, wait. Oh, no, wait. Oh, I'm just going to keep going like this, and maybe you'll hit my hand. See
you're
if
on
I
the wrong side.
Oh, there we go. Now I'm on the right side. Okay,
right, whatever.
I think
whatever.
We got
high fives.
I might have got a little bit on your face. I'm sorry about that.
It's really hard figuring that stuff out, man.
Yeah, it is. It's all
well,
backwards.
Well, with the video and the reverses and all that good stuff. It's hard.
Hey, man, well, you know what? We pulled it off. I was worried that we would go a little long, but I think we're going to make it in one episode.
It's a lot of news this week.
I know. Project Morris was asking about the B3 review, and he should be excited about the B3 review because I think it comes from his neck of the woods over there in the UK, and I haven't received it yet. And now they're just
I'm
getting
curious.
Free plugs from me talking about it. But it should be it's like the size, it's smaller than like an inverter that you get for your car to convert your power outlet.
Yeah.
To AC, it's smaller than that, I think, and it's it's a Linux server, so hopefully we get it, and it's supposed to be in the mail, but I think it runs Debian. I'm looking at the details right now. I think it runs Debian, and it has an ARM processor.
Don't show people things.
No, but I want to tease a little bit.
It gives echoes.
Oh,
stop that.
No, not from that one. Not from that one. It was the other one. You know, I got.
I don't know. I think they all do echoes.
No echoes. No echoes.
You sure?
No echo. Echo. Echo.
Oh, they,
echo,
everyone
echo.
Says no echoes.
No echo, echo, echo.
I just assume echo. It's what I do right now. You
hey, Brian,
shots,
Brian,
I'm like, Chris, it's going to echo. Don't,
hey,
don't
Brian,
switch
Brian,
shots.
Brian, Brian.
Don't switch shots. It's going to echo, Chris.
All right, man. Well, I think that just about wraps up this episode of the Linux Action Show.
Well,
we
what
should,
else? We have anything else to talk about?
I don't
That's
think so. I mean, I want to tell people, you know, obviously there's the facebook.com/JupiterBroadcasting where we post
that
episode
thing.
Releases there. Yeah. You're on Twitter. Tell people about
I'm
your Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. That's Brian Lunduk. That's my name.
And I'm at Chris Elias. That's not my name. That's just
not your name.
A thing. People always think I'm talking about Las Vegas.
People always do. Oh, and I should make a quick shout out to all the people who have picked up copies of Illumination through the Ubuntu Software Center.
Ooh.
The updates are now working properly.
Aha! Very good.
Took several weeks, but hey, you know, working through issues with Canonical, and I got to say, they were pretty cool about it.
Well, that's
good.
They
were very helpful. So the updates are now working properly, and crazy, now when I update software, it'll be updated in the Canonical store at the same time.
How
crazy.
Lovely.
It's a crazy idea, I know.
So it's like I can just get the updates from some sort of online repository?
Nutty, right?
Fascinating, Brian. I'll have
absolutely
to look into this new technology.
Nutty.
Maybe we could base a show around that.
We could.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Linux Action Show, and we'll be right back here next Sunday. That one's safe. You Skype dropped packed. And then you popped on Pi. It's usable, though, so if not.
No. We don't do usable around here. This is not some show with Jeremy. Come on. We don't just do usable. I can say that because he's definitely still in bed.
Yeah, totally still sleeping.
Yeah. If not, I'm sorry.